Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. We have a disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated. Good evening. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds, author, followership coach, professor with a research focus on toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? But tonight, I'm not alone. You know, I have my wonderful, awesome guest with me, Dr. Lonnie Morris Jr.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Lonnie.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. So excited to be here. I love our talks on the Access Point. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris, a management professor and consultant and author, and I spend most of my time helping really, really talented people unpack all the crazy things that happen at work, just like we do here on the Access Point. Tonight, we are talking about something I'm sure everyone has experienced. It's that not today moment, dealing with reckless people in the workplace. That might be your clients, that might be your customers, might be your coworkers. And we've talked a lot about it on this show. It's often your boss. But depending on how extreme the situation might be, we know that you have some additional thoughts and feelings about being pushed to the edge. But sometimes you come back to reality and assess, what are the stakes for this? Do I say something? Do I not? Well, we're going to talk about all of that. And we have an incredible guest, and I'm so excited to have him here with us. Our guest tonight is Dr. Andre Parchment, who is a human resources professional with a background supporting organizations in training, development, engagement, and cultivating the employee experience. He's focused on the alignment of organization vision and the people function to promote culture formation and sustainability. Andre supports organizations to embody the values that they promote. He's skilled in strategy, recruiting, benefits, and compensation, HR policies, management, and org development. He's worked in a number of industries, including education, retail, nonprofit, finance, manufacturing, and has done some work in startups. He has a bachelor's degree in psychology and religious studies, a master's in industrial organizational psychology, and a PhD in organizational leadership. Andre Parchment, welcome to the Access Point.
Thank you so much for having me. I will, I guess, just say this, that it's always an honor to be in a space with brilliant minds such as this. So I'm super excited for today's conversation.
Well, that's a good way to get started. Let's start this conversation the right way. I guess I want to start with, how did we get here in the first place? So if we kind of understand, I think everyone knows what it means to see reckless behavior. And we're particularly talking about people that are hard to deal with, particularly if they are getting some service from you. So if you service their unit and there's pushback, whatever it can look like. And we'll talk about some of that a little more. But what really starts us off in this way? And the reason that made me think about this is I saw something in Business Insider earlier this week. And this piece about Gen Z being sick and tired of their jobs. And it really talked about how young people are just as fed up and just as burnt out and just as over it as people in their generations before them. But there are two particular things that stood out to me about why they respond certain ways. And they said that part of it is there are unclear norms and expectations in organizations. And the second part is very much contextual, that a lot of people are still dealing with post-pandemic stress. And so some of this recklessness comes from those two things. What are the other issues? How do we get here? Andre, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I think great question. I think generally everyone is a little bit tired. COVID probably exacerbated that to a different degree, but I would say that Gen Z's response is a little bit unique, but it's not anything that anyone hasn't experienced prior. How we got to this point is we had social interactions between different cohorts, different perspectives, and this is where the crucial piece about diversity and understanding how different people work shows up in organizations in a very dynamic way, where you've got now this very vocal population mixed alongside with a population that would have been extremely miserable in their careers for 30 years all the way to the point of retirement. And not
is it
not,
miserable?
Yeah, I would say that some of them are miserable. They're extremely happy to retire, and they look back at their careers and they think that it's something that has made sense. And I would say contextually within the times that they were in the workforce, it absolutely did make sense. Now that we've got this shifting mindset of how we want to work in a sense of entitlement and ownership over our careers, you're seeing a lot more people say, I'm not going to deal with this. And you'll see a lot more quiet quitting, mass exodus within organization, and then just lower engagement scores that makes for really fun conversations for HR professionals.
Unfortunately, though, I think Gen Z gets a bad rap. Just for speaking up, for speaking their mind, for sharing their thoughts about what the workplace should look like. During COVID, they really get a bad rap.
So what should the rap be, Dr. Wendy?
I think we need to reevaluate what the workplace looks like and stop trying to go back to what it used to be, right? So if we take advantage of the multiple generations in the workplace and listen to what they have to say, maybe it's time for employers to make the shift. Rather than demonize them, how about being more, and I don't want to use the term accommodating, but at least understand the perspectives that they're coming from and their experiences, and make those changes in the workplace. The demand to just come back to work right away, that's unfortunate. And then we're seeing rebellion. And it's not just Gen Z. We are looking at rebellion from all aspects and all the generations in the workplace, because working from home has changed our world, and it changed our lives. And what I see with some of the Gen Z is that during that time, they were able to multitask. And right now, they may not be willing to give that up. So their time working from home could look like, maybe I could hold another job. Maybe I could do something different. Maybe I can begin to have my side hustle. And they're not willing to make that change.
All right, so that's good to sort of set the stage for where we are, particularly when we're talking about the differences in the generations. So I saw something else in Business News Daily probably last month that gave us a typology of the difficult people that we deal with at work. And this was particularly focused on clients and customers. So I think about that in the case if you are in a unit where you deal with other units across your organization and you see them as clients, or if you have customers that you deal with. So your role is public facing or outward facing. You have clients that you deal with. And here's what they gave this list, right? So that there are these different customer types that sort of fit this bad, reckless behavior. There's the impatient. There's an indecisive. They're angry. There are some that are demanding. Some that want to argue. There's a group that always wants a refund. And then just some people who are generally unhappy. So when I think about this list, and we look at lists a lot on the Access Point, what I think is this sounds like a good general typology, but is there something specific that we need to think about as Black and Brown people that's missing? What's the thing that we find, that we see when we experience this reckless and rude behavior towards us? What should we add to this list? Andre, why don't you start us out?
I would say silent is what I would add to the list. And it's interesting because as you were talking about impatient, indecisive, angry, I was thinking to myself, those are the clients that we service all of the time. And it shows up in how we engage with stakeholders as well. And I will say that if we're talking about Black and Brown folks, silent is oftentimes what comes to mind for me. They'll more than likely, they'll be impatient, but they'll be impatient in silence. They'll be indecisive, still in silence, not necessarily getting the same quality that everyone else is getting. I think that Silent is probably the big standout for me in terms of service. And I oftentimes think of that experience that you have walking into a store where you're not receiving customer service. Someone walks in right after you and their experience is completely different night and day. And then they have the ability to be that impatient, indecisive, angry, or refund-oriented customer that that same person of color never had the luxury of being. So it's very interesting to see how that shows up in organizations.
And you know, I'm glad you made that gave that example, because I've experienced that before, and I've probably been the silent person that's just walked away. I said, okay, well, clearly you don't want my money here, so I'll just go somewhere else. But I typically don't speak up about it and say something to them. Dr. Wendy, your thoughts?
So I see this a little differently, only because of a recent experience that I had in a coffee shop. I walked in and there were three young gentlemen, African-American males, who were there obviously before me for some length of time. Only after ordering a coffee and a bagel or whatever it was, I ended up with a 25-minute wait. So I can't imagine what they had. And because they became upset and they were saying, excuse me, you know, can you tell me where my food is? And they only ordered two items, which was something to drink and a burrito at the time. And the manager made them out to be the bad person, right? Because what happened is that it escalated. And they were very respectful at all times. But the manager said, oh, a burrito? Let me get you the burrito. And so they're like, well, we ordered three. Where are they? And so the more that the manager began to ask them, people were coming in, but they're only seeing the behavior of the customers. Right? And it was unfair. Because then people became frightened because they were African Americans. They had locks, but they were really for over 30 minutes just sitting there waiting for the coffee or the drink and the burrito. And it just got to a point where they said, no, we need to be serviced. And because the manager didn't handle it, they became the bad person. So someone thought it was important to begin to sing praises. And then it really made them look bad. And I became defensive over those three young men because I thought about my own son and my grandsons. And those were some mother's children right there. Right. And I felt protected, that I needed to protect them. And I said, no, I said their anger is legitimate and they've been here. And it's because the manager did not service them and explain to them what's going on. This is what you're seeing. This is what you're looking at. They are not bad people. They are waiting for their food. And then they say, oh. And so we have to be mindful about what that looks like for Black and brown people when we say handling difficult customers. Who's really the cause behind the behavior? And I think that's what's missing sometimes.
I love that. And I think we probably all have experienced that in some way or witnessed or observed that and been a victim of that. And I know there have been times, and I've seen people, and I think about in the workplace too, where someone I'm watching or observing either in an email exchange or in a meeting, and I'm not clear why someone is responding in a way that seems a little perhaps overbearing or seems a little aggressive, maybe a little assertive, but I can tell there's something wrong. But I also recognize that I don't know the backstory. So I think part of that, what we're saying here, Andre and Dr. Wendy, is that there's something about the backstory you must understand to be able to unpack what the experience is there.
Exactly.
I was going to say, if I may throw out one additional word, and I'm going to like unpack it after I say it, because I feel like it's controversial, even in my head. Entitled is the word that I would add to the list, but not from a negative lens. I'm thinking from an equity perspective. Does everyone not deserve the opportunity to illustrate the same behaviors in the same way at the same cadence, whether it's you as a customer or you in the workplace? And I do think that there should be a sense of entitlement. Like, I do deserve to be able to efficiently receive my food, be respected in the workplace, have these opportunities that's the same from an equity perspective. And justified is the underlying word to go with the entitled. And I know that entitled kind of like has a negative connotation to it, but should we not, as people of color and brown folk and diverse individuals, be entitled to the same opportunities and offerings that everyone else has and receive the same level of service, is what comes to mind after Dr. Whitney's story.
Powerful.
And now I feel entitled. You just knighted me. I appreciate it. So y'all got to get all my reckless behavior for the rest of the show today. So, but I think this is a really good segue, right? So I was reading a study in the Journal of Occupational Organizational Psychology, and it was about people of color who witness this type of reckless behavior for other people of color. And I know, Andre, that your work, you've done some work, some research around incivility in the workplace. Now, this is particularly a study about people of color witnessing incivility for other people of color. And here's what they found, right? So they talked to minorities in the UK in the tech, accounting, and finance sectors, and they were asking people about, what did you see and how did you experience this? It's really, in this literature, it's called selective incivility. So it really is saying that this was targeted at a particular group of people, and we're from that same group, and we watched it happen. And here's what they found, that when people observed it happening to others, that in one regard, they excused it. They explained it away as it was unintentional, it was going to happen anyway, and that it wasn't really that offensive. So the examples they give is if someone speaks over you in a meeting or disregarding your contributions. I got plenty to say about that. They also said that some of them experienced it from a vantage point of betterment, that they would try to position themselves to intervene, like Dr. Wendy just did, and just described, to counteract the effects of it. So if they saw someone from their same ethnic group who might look like they were isolated in a social gathering, they would go and talk to those people. The third thing, and this is probably goes back to what you mentioned, Andre, about the silence, is there was also this notion of passive aggression, that they might, in a subtle or indirect way, give some negative response to the perpetrators of this without being too forward. So my question around this is, if we are experiencing this vicariously and we're observing, as Dr. Wendy just described in her example, how do we navigate this pressure that builds up when we see this behavior, particularly when we know that it is selective in the case of this study and targeted? So we know, we recognize that this is someone who is treating us this way because we are X. And on the access point across Living Corporate, that could be anything. That could be because that person is transgender, because that person is LGBT, because that person is Black, because that person is a woman, because that person is, fill in whatever you want for the X. How do we navigate that?
I think that there's been a lot of literature, and this for me is kind of like this interesting gray area between incivility and microaggressions. Microaggressions, we all know, were this very popular term generalized for these little subtle jabs, digs, and they were directed specifically based on race, and they had this underlying tone to them. Incivility, a little bit more interesting, because incivility is centered around the ambiguity of if it's directional versus it being something specifically targeting someone. And so I think that there is no one perfect solution for how you navigate it. I do think that setting the tone on an ongoing basis for threshold for tolerance, what we're willing to accept, what we're not willing to accept, and the timetable in which someone's actually addressing it are critical to organizational cultures. And so it's interesting that you noted that it happened in tech, accounting, and finance, because that's specifically where my research was centered. And I would say that all of the research suggested that more senior individuals felt the need to protect the more junior individuals. I will also say that given that the incivility itself is selective, there might not be a senior person that's able to provide that level of protection and defense when they do see it happening. And I feel like there's a collective ownership that should essentially happen, not specifically to put the pressure on everyone, but if you're not intentionally speaking up when you see something happening to your peers, we're not actually holding people accountable for their behaviors. And at the end of the day, the silence itself will create either a spiral or an environment where incivilities themselves thrive and they become normalized to the extent that no one's complaining about them, giving pushback, and then you've just got this very uncomfortable culture where people are remaining in silence until they exit, or they just remain in silence until they retire.
So wait, you telling me, Andre, that for the 30 miserable years, Becky is reckless because Michelle was reckless because Wendy was reckless. So reckless is just sort of how we operate here.
Yeah, I think that it's funny, like in the last 10 years, people have talked so much about we want to define our organizational culture, not realizing culture, climate, two different things. And there's so many layers with subcultures and unwanted behaviors from minorities, people of color, individuals that would be listening to the Access Point that become normalized. And you just think to yourself, it is what it is. This is just how someone behaves. Like my favorite line is, that's just who Michelle is. That's literally saying that saying that Michelle's behavior is justified and we are okay with it happening versus saying Michelle's behaviors are not consistent with what we value as an organization. HR or someone needs to coach Michelle on what is acceptable. And I do think that, like, I'm so glad that I wasn't born 20, 50 years ago.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute.
But let me give the context of why I'm glad. Because I'm a little bit outspoken. So even as an HR person, I do feel like I'm an outsider in part because my team is all white. But I'm still an outsider because I'm always going to speak up and say something that doesn't feel appropriate or pull someone to the side. And I recognize that not everyone has that same level of comfort at calling things out. And I know that we use the language calling people in. No, some things need to be explicitly called out so that the behavior itself is extinguished. I would not have survived 50 years ago in the workplace, if I'm going to be honest.
So, and Dr. Wendy and I talk about this all the time. There's always, and we just had an example that you explained to me just recently. There's always the person in the meeting that people go, wait, don't say nothing. That's just how he is.
Yeah. No excuses. But, you know, I was just thinking about what you said, Dr. Andre, and I'm thinking about my dad, who was a boxer in the military, and you used the term how microaggressions is really just taking a jab. And one thing that he always talked about is that a constant jab will eventually make a boxer go down. That constant jab, it gets more painful every time. And as long as the referee doesn't come in and stop it, it gets worse and worse and worse. So it doesn't take a knockout punch that's really powerful. It's just that constant jab where you say selective incivility or incivility alone is, you know, you have to determine whether or not it's directed or not. Well, nobody goes out in the ring and swings wildly. So I think there's more to incivility when it's constant or consistent that looks more like the jab.
Wow. That's powerful. That image is powerful. So I'm thinking of boxing matches that I've seen. I think about seeing that physical contact and thinking of how this is not necessarily physical, but it's emotional. Right. It's psychological and it's continuous and just wears you down to get to what Dr. Andre said is the 30 years of misery.
It has the same effect.
Yeah. Wow. So this is good. Right. So let's talk about this because I've been looking at information about the long term effects of this. When people experience this incivil, microaggressive, reckless behavior from customers, clients, whoever it is, and it's pervasive and consistent over time, this sort of aura of rudeness sticks, right? And this is weird because I read something in a veterinarian journal, which I don't typically do, but they were writing about this too, that the lasting impacts of this for the person who is experiencing it, and not necessarily the person who's experiencing it indirectly, but who is the direct target of this bad behavior, this disrespectful tone, this dismissive attitude and interaction, that you begin withdrawing. And Dr. Andre mentioned some of that earlier about the silence, that it's so pervasive that it's always on your mind. It is the thing that stays there. You're constantly thinking about it, constantly trying to navigate it in your head, and that it becomes very personal. So while the perpetrator may not see it as personal to you, or at least may not describe it that way, it definitely feels internally like a personal attack. So what are our strategies when we are dealing with the reckless? Because if this is part of what Dr. Andre said, if this is part of the culture, and right now we're saying it could be the culture internally, so how you're dealing with people in your own unit, it might be across the organization, how you're dealing with people across units and how you work together, and it might also spill over into how, and some of your clients are dealing with you that way. So this is what we expect. This is the norm of how behavior is, how behavior manifests in this space. How do we navigate and manage the long-term effect of this?
I say you take it to the community, and my initial reaction was you take it to the streets.
Come on, to the streets. I knew it. The real news was coming out.
You know, and what's interesting is I'll share this. Like, I have moments where I sit in silence, and I have to be like intentional and methodical in my thought process. Like, is this just a me thing? And I think that if I spend too much time spinning my wheels, I recognize that I'm overthinking it because something wasn't right. And oftentimes, not to say that you should kind of pulse the people around you, but even directional incivility or situational incivility, it's something that someone else is going to see and experience at some point in time, like sexual harassment in the workplace. And I know that that's a further extreme. That's not a one-time instance. One person probably that's got right. up and spoke about it. But I do think that thinking about it from a community perspective, and I will say that I had the pleasure of working with this amazing nonprofit that's been on this journey to discover how we work. And their how we work journey, and I'm doing the air quotes as if everyone can see me, their how we work journey was centered around how we socialize and what are acceptable behaviors. Organizations that aren't engaging in those conversations are just talking, this is what we want to be. We want to be Fortune's top places to work on the Forbes list and all of these incremental places where you're recognized for how we socialize, but don't realize that there are intricacies for the socialization that are missing. In which case, I think that it starts with a conversation and community in terms of like, how do we work as a team? What's acceptable for us? What's our preferred working styles? And I do think that that's a starting point for extinguishing behaviors that we don't want to see happening over and over. If the conversation doesn't start, it can't actually end, and the behaviors will never actually shift. And so for me, it starts with a conversation. And I think most people are afraid to address these things head on, but there are ways to say, hey, let's focus on team building. I work at my best when we do these things. I don't work at my best when we do these things. And it's not a way for Sharon to just raise her hand in the middle of the conversation and say, by the way, Lonnie, let me tell you about what you did last week. I think that we could be intentional.
I wish Sharon would.
we could be very intentional about how we, I guess, quote unquote, call people in while at the same time talking about the impact to us on a personal level. I think for me in my HR career, the biggest feedback I've ever heard is that you are too people centric. And I do think that that is criticism said to me as an organization. We are not people centric, right? If your HR people are too focused on people and how they socialize, interact, and enjoy their work, then essentially it says that the organization doesn't have that as a priority. And I will say that I spent a lot of my career at that organization, and I realized at that moment after I received that feedback that I could never truly grow, because the truth is that my focus was on something that we weren't willing to open as a conversation as an organization. And I do think that when people recognize and speak up for themselves, if they don't feel like their voices are heard, they'll remove themselves. But you have to open your mouth and actually elevate your concerns in order to actually take that next step.
I love that because I'm an advocate. Dr. Wendy, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking that that lines up with the literature where there's such a focus on leadership and leaders design the culture and they do everything when that's not necessarily true. As Dr. Andre just said, it's the followers. It's the focus on the people, the actual people who are doing the work and what they're willing to deal with or not. And so maybe it isn't the top down strategy, but it is the bottom up. And because of that, that's why you left that organization. They thought, that's crazy.
That's crazy to be focused on people.
Yeah. Why people?
Who would do that? We got to get these widgets out.
Right.
I would say that there's a guy on TikTok who literally, I don't even know what his handle is. I'm not going to promote it. But he essentially has these moments where he talks about, he goes, that's crazy. Segregation, right? And then kind of peeks over to the left to see, like pretending that someone's there to see what his coworkers' reactions are. And I will say that even as an HR practitioner, I do that in meetings. I'll bring something up just to see how people are reacting to it. And that kind of like gives you a pulse and a quick little peek into their minds. If people are not reacting the same way you're reacting and everyone's a little bit different, you could tell that you're not on the same frequency. If people aren't in shock mm-hmm. when we're talking about harassment mm-hmm. and hostile work environments, mm-hmm. you can tell that they're not going to be the ones that are championing alongside you as you're trying to change that organizational culture. And it's fun. It's fun to watch the reactions and fun to watch how uncomfortable people get at some of these conversations.
And those are the things that we're sending text messages about under the table, right? Or in the private Zoom chat. Watch this.
I do think that there's a good way to for people generally listening to approach these conversations. And this is what I personally do in addition to looking around the room. I ask questions instead of making directional statements. And by asking questions and open-ended questions at that, you're starting a conversation and people will give you more of their perspective than you would have gotten if you just made a statement and waited for the reaction. And it sounds like it's something so simple, like, Andre, why is that your piece of advice that you're giving people? I am known at work for asking questions because I will always have a pulse on how people act, how they behave, and how they react to things in their environment.
It makes sense to me. I think some of the other supportive practices that make sense in these environments or in these situations are tell someone else so that even if you feel uncomfortable, because sometimes it's being the person to speak out, being the person to speak up, being the person to call someone in or out is a little unnerving. And so if you're able to have a conversation with a trusted coworker, a trusted peer, another trusted client, someone else who deals with those people, and get their take on it, and then maybe have a shared perspective. But also it's allowing someone else to be aware of how you've experienced it so that they can come to your defense and be an advocate. Well, come to the defense of anyone who might experience it, but also be an advocate for it. And but we get a chance to share the story. I know that sometimes people, particularly when it's dealing with customers, so people who aren't internal, but I guess we see it internal as well, that people just decide, you're not a person I'm going to work with anymore, right? Because that could be a client. You say, well, I decided your behavior shows me it's not safe for me to deal with you, or I don't want to deal with those things. And I think that silence you mentioned earlier, Dr. Andre, turns in when we're talking about internal relationships, sometimes you get ghosted, right? So the person that you used to talk to or you used to collaborate with is no longer interested in being in your presence because I can't deal with how you respond to things. I can't deal with your perspective. I can't deal with your disregard for other people's value and values. So we shift.
I want to mention something about the social media. We were laughing a few minutes ago about this is when we send text messages, right? It's at those moments that I've done that. We've all done that where you're like, did you hear what I think I heard? But social media is starting to play a role in how we are exposing toxicity in the workplace, incivility in the workplace, and what we're willing to put up with and what we're not. So in the Daily Mail in the UK article, there was someone who actually kept record of multiple text messages that have been sent to ridiculous emails and text messages from bosses. And there's one that I just thought was hilarious. It's a winning notification. You won an extra 10-minute break, it says. And then there's...
Oh, that's funny. I'm sorry.
24-hour notice. 2, do not have to pick the same day. 3, cannot be added to your regular breaks. This 10-minute break, 4, expires within 30 days. And it tells you to choose wisely. So the person who received that wonderful gift of a 10-minute break left their job after receiving it. You think?
I'm not mad at that.
I mean,
I'll tell you what my text message says right now. I already know. Go ahead.
I just thought that was hilarious because we're really looking at, I mean, where there's no shame in incivility. There's no shame in not caring. There's no shame at all. And so what do you expect? That's the bottom line. What do you expect?
I love that we're talking about examples and combing through how people deal with this. I saw this in the Forbes Business Council. So here are some quick ways for you to deal with difficult clients and people that you have to work with. The recommendations are speak with authority. So this is the notion of stand up for yourself. Present evidence with your data. This is getting a little weird. And there's always a weird list when we talk about this. I love this one. Modify the service agreement, even if it's informal, as needed. To work with an onboarding form. This is about what we discussed earlier, setting expectations. So here's how we'll operate. Here's what I expect from you. Here's what you expect from me. Limit the calls. We already talked about this. Is this sort of getting away from the people who cause this harm, the clients who respond recklessly, the coworkers who are incivil. And if all else fails, like the 10-minute break person, cut all ties.
Roll out.
Roll out. So I think whenever I see a list like this, I always think there are some additional things. And we've mentioned a few. So what else would we add to a list like this? If we were thinking of, here are the best things to do, how would we add to it? Dr. Andre, what's next on our list?
My initial reaction is cry. Because if you know anything about me, like if I get stressed about something, if I ever make it to the point of tears, I'm automatically done. Rollout is probably a lot further up on the list for a lot of people. I would say that this is where mentorship and sponsorship and advocacy and that whole realm of who you have in your corner championing for you and who you can actually talk to about these things is really helpful. And I do think that that's probably first thing that comes to mind, because if I wasn't able to have an outlet to talk about it, it would just drive me insane. There would be the discomfort. I might just give them my notice after my 10-minute break and just run away. But I do think that being able to effectively communicate it, right, being able to effectively communicate it with people that understand your lived experience to some degree, and they might not understand it 100%, I think is extremely helpful, so that it mitigates the running away piece. The other piece that I think about is how we onboard, and I'm going to go back to the piece. I tell people how to respect me versus waiting for them to figure it out the hard way.
And I will say that again.
I will say that if you knew me as a child, I never spoke up. I was so soft-spoken that people that were smaller than me would fight my battles for me. At this point in time, I recognize I can't bring my cousin that likes to fight on my behalf to work with me.
You can't.
Wait. You need a badge.
I think you can.
I need a badge to scan into the building where I work now. So I definitely can't bring him. I appreciate him and his willingness, even though he's like half my height. He's always wanted to fight for me, but it's because I've been soft-spoken. And those are often the people that will more than likely be impacted in the greatest ways because they're silent through it all. But I generally think that you walking into the conversation, it's never the top-down perspective where power is a dynamic in my book anymore. I get it. You're a VP. You might be the president of the company. I don't allow my mother to raise her voice at me. If we're going to have a productive conversation, we're going to talk like we're two human beings. And so the fact that I have expectations for how my mother interacts with me, and she, if anything, has all of the power over me, she's my heart. If she doesn't yell at me, then I create those same clear expectations for how I work. And I think that even someone that's early career, you don't have to say this is how you will treat me, but these are my preferred styles, and kind of like verbalizing that before someone has an opportunity to cross a line. If you identify where the lines are, you have a little bit more clarity and you can give people that clear feedback. Hey, when we talked about work styles, this is what I said. This is not what I'm seeing, and it gives you the opportunity to realign on expectations going forward.
And you know why I love this? When I have new clients, I always start out with, tell me what are your pet peeves? Because I want to know, where should I step lightly? What are the things that are going to drive you crazy that might be just part of how I work regularly? But I want to know so we are clear about it and we can figure out a way to do something else, right? Because asking you to lean into the pet peeves conversation is also about getting to understand your preferences, as you just described, Dr. Andre. Go ahead, Dr. Wendy.
I'm in total agreement with what both of you all are saying. You have to teach people how to treat you, and unapologetically. I think what's not on this list is when you are the victim or of a toxic leader, a toxic culture. I hate to use the word victim, but when you are harmed, the truth is, I mean, it may not be easy for you to just leave the job and walk away, but one of the strategies that I've learned to use is to get in circles where there are like-minded people for me, where I can enjoy and grow and be innovative and be reminded of who I am and what I've come to do is the right thing. As I continue to develop myself and continue to make sure that I am marketable, right? So in the event that if you bring me to tears and I choose to leave, I will. But I'm in a good space.
And I love that because we're not just talking about internal experiences of the organization. We're saying we see this happen with clients, with customers. And so there's a time where you need to find where's the safe space where I can go and vent a little bit and get Andre to tell me, here's what my cousin who used to fight for me would do. And here's what I'm not going to let my mama say. And then go back out and re-engage, right? But sometimes people are holding that as leverage, particularly if you're dealing in a customer environment. If you are servicing people who are external and they think they have, and I have multiple clients that I coach who have this all the time, who work in government agencies, and they're saying, hey, I'm constantly dealing with people because their agency controls the purse strings, that they are rude and unruly and reckless and disrespectful, and they think we just have to deal with it.
You know what I think of as you said that, and I've probably been thinking about this since the top of the show, that you don't necessarily hear the language that the customer is always right anymore. I think about like my early career retail
so
days,
true.
And I recognize, I'm like, the customer is not right. Like, that person's actually rude and disrespectful, and we should refuse their service as a means of creating.
I'm going to make a sign. This is the customer is not right.
I was that person. I pretty much almost got fired at one point because I told the customer that I will not be disrespected just because I work at CVS. I had 2 degrees at that point. working at CVS because there was a recession, and you don't see that same language that the customer is always right. The customer is at the center of what we're trying to solve for, but they are in need of something from you or someone external to themselves. So right shouldn't be what we're anchoring to and leveraging that everything that they need, we give it to them. You can have exactly what you need, but you will still play by the rules of this space. And organizations that are just like, we allow customers to beat up on our employees, those employees don't stick around for very long, and they'll bite back at some point in time, and you'll see that revolving door happen more often. But I will say that organizations that support the people will absolutely say, customer, we love and appreciate your business. However, there is a way to conduct yourself within this space, and we will not allow you to provide harm to the people that we're responsible for protecting.
Govern yourselves accordingly.
Well, let me ask you this. There are times when we are in job situations and these things show up or come up. It can be a change of guard, change in the team, leadership, and then you see this drastic change. But then we have a responsibility to look for signs, and we may not always be aware of how to do that, that maybe the culture that we are trying to get a job in may not be the right place or the right fit for us. And so Forbes has an article, and they list four types of culture. One is the social culture that fosters a strong interpersonal relationship and collaboration, you know, this wonderful, friendly atmosphere. There's the dependable culture that values stability, efficiency, and quality performance through employees. There's the enterprising culture that emphasizes creativity, allows you to be innovative, and it's a merit-based competition, right? The more you do that is creative, we're going to reward you. And then there's the hierarchical culture that has clear organizational structure and well-defined roles. But we also know that type of culture also has this whole power and authority dominance. So if you were to look, the article states, if you were to look at an ad, there are five specific languages that's used that should make you run, or at least second guess, maybe not run, but second guess as to whether or not this is something for you. One is a phrase that would say fast-paced environment. And we've all heard these before.
That's the job I was in.
Right.
That's on the job announcement.
That's exactly right. Run. When you see it, don't do it. The second one is must be available for 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Where have you seen that? I've never seen that ever.
Or they'll say flexibility is key.
Oh, there
so
you go.
So that's it. That's number four, flexible schedule. three was high tolerance for ambiguity.
Oh.
And then the last
ever.
Here's one that I have definitely seen, and I tell me if I'm wrong, but this one is must thrive under pressure.
Oh.
I thought this was great.
Oh my God.
Should be a billboard. It should be a billboard.
I feel like the ideal employee for something like that is a diamond. And I don't know what else to think other than that, but I'm good under pressure that I create for myself, but you're not about to drop a house on me and think that I'm going to survive and not just give you this 10-minute notice.
And we only see your feet at the bottom.
Go ahead and drop the house. The feet will be there. I will not when you pick the house back up at the end.
Wait, I need my extra 10-minute break right now. Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. I will also say that what's interesting is all of these social media personalities that are taking away the ambiguity, if you will, for like job postings and providing very clear direction for people that are on the job search. And so they highlight things like this, and they're just like, these are the essential watch outs. And so you'll see a lot more people just say, okay, I did see it in the job description. I didn't pay attention to it. I realized that that's what this is, but I'm not going to put up with it. And then they'll leave. And you'll see that that early career attrition probably increase when those job descriptions aren't matching anything other than a house of chaos. And some people thrive in those spaces, but that's also where incivility thrives, in my opinion.
Well, I think this is a, these are good points. And I think something for us to consider is that particularly, and I think anyway, if it's an internal client, internal customer, external client, external customer, that the incivility that we may experience, depending, the reckless behavior that we get and the pushback that we get sometimes is not bad. Sometimes it is informative. I saw it in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology where they looked at incivility as a primer for creativity on the part of the provider of the service. That there's something honest about someone pushing back, saying, I don't like this. I'm not happy with that. That is a signal that there's some change that needs to be made, and that over time, if the organization is in the right position to listen to these complaints, to listen to these comments, to hear, like you said, Dr. Andre, ask the questions to understand what's under this behavior, that there's some valuable information that can help you make changes that make whatever you provide to the space different and better. So is acting out always bad?
It depends on who your HR person is. I personally support it. And I think that there's a really good strategic way to encourage people to act out in a quote unquote professional way that doesn't get you fired in 2 seconds. So I don't want to say that I've coached people on how to professionally act out, but I have had a few of those calls in the last month.
Having to be thought of as the angry Black woman comes to mind as to how I really have to think about my responses to situations. But I am not known to be quiet at all about it. Over the years, having made many of mistakes, I've learned how to do that. But I will say that there are times when it is justified that you not be silent, and that you don't have to be politically correct. Wrong is wrong. And there are times when people need to be called out.
Yeah, I'll share this like really quick personal story. All of my stories are personal and they're always long, but this one will be a quick one. That I was talking to someone about what it means to be authentic in the workplace, and that for people of color, there is no such thing. Like, you're going to leave a piece of yourself at home because the way we act and interact in our homes will never be the same as how quote unquote professional culture is in organizations. And this was like an executive that kind of leaned in and gave me this response. And it was, you don't mean that you just want to get ghetto. Like, that's not your intention. And that is textbook incivility, rude, disrespectful. all of those things literally.
Well, you were talking about bringing your cousin to fight. Wait a minute.
Listen, and he would absolutely fight this battle. A part of me is still thinking about how to constructively give that feedback, because I recognize that the response itself was not intended, and I recognize that intention versus impact is one of those things that we don't talk about anymore. But harm at the end of the day is harm. This has been something that's been on my mind for months, and I have no idea as an HR person how to give that feedback to another person. And that being said, I know that there are tons of people sitting in organizations in silence that just don't know how to formally find their voice or give that feedback, because there's a power dynamic for the person that needs to hear that behavior was inappropriate. But a part of me, and I might just be speaking to myself, is you have to band it off. And someone that needs the feedback should have the feedback so that they're not doing more harm to someone else. So to Dr. Wendy's point, right is right, wrong is wrong, and you're going to have to call some things out. And we'll That's revisit right. this in a month. So I'll let you all know how that conversation went.
So when we look at all the things we discussed today, we learned some important lessons across the spectrum of people in our spaces. For employees, what we discussed is be mindful of the silent clients. Dr. Andre started us out with that. They choose not to share their displeasure for whatever reason, but they may be moving on in a way. They may be ghosting you in a way that you don't understand. Speak up when you see something. We see this all over the place. If you see something, say something. I'm going to laugh, but this is in my notes. Take it to the streets, Dr. Andre, right? But really, in this context, we're saying have conversations, honest conversations, open conversations, unpack the reality for everyone that's involved to figure out how you can get to the bottom of it and have a amicable resolution. Reflect when this happens, when you experience it, but do not ignore. There's much more value in processing your experience and then acting. Don't try to dismiss it. Speak up for yourself. Ask questions to start a conversation, to gain better understanding and understand their perspective. Tell people how to respect you instead of letting them figure it out along the way. And be unapologetic about your standards for respect. Find a safe space within the context of your work where you can share your experiences and hear from others about how they might manage that, how they might deal with it. We are very clear that the customer is not always right. They may be at the center of a lot of what we do, whether that's your internal customer or your external customer, but they are not always right. For leaders and supervisors and managers, recognize that reckless behavior is very similar to incivil behavior, is very close to the edge of microaggressions, and they are all slightly different, but the impact is the same. Dr. Andre said this, harm is harm. Understand who is, or figure out in your unit, what you're managing, people that you manage, who is protecting employees from experiencing this, both directly and indirectly. I imagine that you're looking in the mirror right now thinking that should be you, and there are probably other people who should be on that team. Reckless, incivil behavior, Dr. Wendy told us, is a constant jab, whether it's coming from customers, from clients, from internal folks, from peers, from coworkers, from managers, is constantly wearing you down. You don't need this one punch knockout. People experience the harm when it continues to happen. For groups and teams, figure out how you defend the people who experience this. When you observe it, how do you establish norms within your group of how we behave, how we act, how we respond? How do you do that with customers? How do you do that with clients? Figure out how we deal with it as a community. Create a communal space for not just conversation, but for sharing, for healing, for strategizing, for resolutions. This is about bringing everyone along and helping everyone have a successful experience. From an organizational standpoint, we are in the age of quiet kid quitting. And we talk about that a lot on the Access Point because it's so prevalent. And people are over it. So recognize all these things that are happening as the organizations are shifting and evolving, and as the workplace is shifting and evolving, that we need new strategies and new guidance and new support for our behaviors. Make the shift. When we see these negative things happening, when we experience recklessness on either side of the spectrum, and stop demonizing employees for it. Consider if we are looking at rebellion from a holistic standpoint. There are costs associated with this notion that we're all in the work from anywhere mode, and how is that driving what you may be experiencing from people in a negative way? We are proud to say, Dr. Andre, that we are entitled. We are all entitled to the same level of service, the same level of support, and that if I'm reckless because you haven't provided that for me, I'm entitled to respond that way. What is it in your organization, in your field, in your industry? What is the reckless behavior? People know it, but have you called it out? Have you named it? And what does it say about your organization if you are seeing that or if you are letting it go on? Leverage mentorship and sponsorship throughout your organization to help employees navigate these troubles and move beyond them. customers can have what they need, but they cannot behave in any way they want. Be careful with loaded phrases like works well under pressure and flexible, because we know that those are masking some demands that we may not want and that we are definitely not going to adhere to. Rude responses is a sign. Reckless behavior is a sign that there, or could be a sign that there's real change needed in your service model. Figure out what the issues are. Adjust accordingly. That's a lot. That's a lot for one day. So people, don't listen to what we just discussed today. If they are not heeding our advice about employees, about managers, about groups, about the organization, what is the tax? What is the cost? What is the tax for Black and brown people who don't pay attention to this? Dr. Andre.
First thought, misery. And I'm not, I do think of myself as a miserable person, but because I make myself miserable, not because my organization makes me miserable. The second thing that comes to mind for me is you miss out on the opportunity to advance yourself, and you find yourself consistently jumping and restarting. You shouldn't have to restart. And I do think that the tax is your own mental health, your emotional well-being, and a career trajectory that probably could have been very easily had if you started speaking up a little bit more. So instead of starting over, going through an interview process, you could literally make your environment start over and you stay put.
Dr. Wendy.
You could actually not know how to or even consider getting out of a situation that you may be exposed to. And that could be wearing and taxing on your health, your mental health, your physical health. And that's going to overtake you and overwhelm you and show up in all aspects of your life, not just your work life and your work relationships and your friendships at home. You could really do damage by not having any of these strategies at your fingertips to work out.
And I think ultimately here, if you ignore all of this, as Dr. Andre said, we're going to have to take it to the streets and bring his cousin and we're going to fight.
I'm sitting here laughing because I'm sure he would appreciate if I dropped his name and if you did call him to take it to the streets, but I will not say what his name
is. I'm going to say thank you on that one.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for the Access Point. We discussed a lot. Let's keep the conversation going. You can listen to the Access Point wherever you get your podcasts. Like, share, comment, subscribe. If there was something that we shared that resonated with you, and you have a question, there was an aha moment, or you got some thoughts about this discussion or future discussions, use the hashtag TAP Reflections across all the social media to let us know. That's TAP for the Access Point Reflections. If you want to join us live, you can tap in with us on Twitter Spaces, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everybody have a good night. Thanks so much.